Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Andrew Lees, and I'm here with my co-host, Clint McPherson. What's up, man? How are you doing today?
Not much. Just glad to be reunited with you, man, and
yes, sir.
Finally getting back and recording an episode together. We've been flying solo for the last few episodes.
Yeah, kind of back and forth a little bit there.
Exactly. But we've got a very special guest on the show today. He's a business coach who helps individuals and teams take their productivity to the next level. Stick around for actionable advice that can help transform your business. But before I introduce our special guest today, I want to remind you to subscribe to our podcast and to our mailing list through our website so you don't miss out on all the free resources we have to help you start and grow your business. With that said, I'd like to welcome our guest today, Robert White, to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. It's great to be with you guys. And I apologize for not having a baseball hat.
That's okay. Yeah, it's well, I'm growing my hair out a little bit over here. And so it's either sort of like up in a ponytail type thing, or it's, but usually I just, it's so much easier to throw it in a hat. And I'm not too keen on the whole, ponytail thing yet. So I gotta figure it all out. But Clint's very consistent with his hat, got that Entrepreneur Life hat there, which is awesome.
It's, you got to be branded these days.
Absolutely. Yep.
So Robert, man, it's great to have you on. And we like to start all of our episodes with just, you know, a question that really helps us understand you a little bit and how you got to where you are. Right. So can you take us back, our listeners, me and Andrew, back to when your entrepreneurial journey actually started? And what it is about entrepreneurship that really gets you motivated and keeps you moving every day?
Look, I'm old, so that's a long story. That would be a simple way to say that. But I as a kid, I was an entrepreneur. I did a lot of different things on my own. And I was operating somewhat from a childhood in poverty and abuse and a bunch of stuff like that, kind of a different story that would require a couch and a therapist.
Right.
But I decided that I would never be poor again. So I started really early. And but I had some health problems. I did have a job. I got into a part-time sales thing, and I was horribly prepared for it. I'm an introvert. I didn't have any skills. I didn't have the right attitude. Just a lot of reasons. So I found myself in my late 20s. Broke, behind on payroll for my little company. And, I had been told I was going to die before I was 35. I had an inoperable, heart condition, and I was divorced and I felt guilty about that. So my life was a mess. And a good friend enrolled me in one of the early human potential movement seminars. That's something called Mind Dynamics. And I went in there with arms crossed, legs crossed, eyes crossed, probably really negative. Came out 4 days later and my life had changed. Sounds like a cliche all these years later, but it really, really worked for me. I got a lot about personal responsibility. I got about connecting with people. I got just a whole lot of things. And in the following year, my little business tripled in size. So I quit the job. And the year after that, it went up 10 times. So I started making more money per month than I had ever made in a year. And I felt better about myself, and another lovely lady came into my life. So, you know, lots of good stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the things that worked for me was, because I ran a sales organization, was sending my salespeople to that seminar.
Okay.
And then my friends and my family, and I was in front of a lot of people. So I enrolled over 400 people in that training. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't understand it. I didn't know who ran it. I didn't know anything about it. I just knew that if I sent people to that training, they came back and they were more productive. And so it was kind of selfish in lots of ways. And so they found out about me, that company. And I got a phone call from the founder of the company, and he flew me out to California. And 10 days later, I was president of Mind Dynamics. So I did spend four years as not an entrepreneur, except that I had a lot of freedom. So as I look back on it, it was kind of entrepreneurial.
Sure.
And first 2 years straightening out the U.S. operation, and the second 2 years creating five foreign subsidiaries. So at early 30s, I got to travel the world. You know, incredible experience, incredible learning, and all that. And in that process, the only country I said no to was Japan, ironically, and it was too expensive. Mm. The language is backwards. There are lots of reasons to say no. But they weren't happy with me saying no. And so they called me about once a month and insisted that I come and set up an operation there. Some things changed with my dynamics. So I resigned. I started a company called LifeSpring. I kept getting those calls from Japan. I kept saying, no, this is a startup. You know, we're crazy busy here. I can't jump across the Pacific.
Yeah.
So I, and then I sold LifeSpring. And so now, and I put every penny that I had into it. Your entrepreneurial audience certainly understands that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was self-funded. And I sold it to the staff for nothing down and forever to pay. And the old joke is that they took longer than forever to pay. you know, so I was unemployed. I had a family. I had a mortgage, you know, all of that stuff. And I'm broke. And so the people from Japan called and said, come for 3 months, set up a program. You can leave. We'll pay you for 1 year.
Wow.
I went, oh, that's good.
That's a good so I went, deal for I went somebody to, unemployed.
Yeah. So I went to Japan for 90 days, stayed the first time 11 years, formed a company called ARC International.
Stayed in Japan for 11 years?
Yes, the first time.
Okay.
I came back later. But, you know, we created a company that became the second largest personal growth training company in the world. And, we were in 15 training centers around Asia and in five countries, and we did really well. And so that's my entrepreneurial journey.
That's amazing.
I ended up quitting, kind of. And, you know, the entrepreneurial journey when you've got 240 people and all those operations, you just basically work all the time. And
can imagine, and I didn't, yep.
And I wasn't, I think I was not as mature as I needed to be, so I worked too much. And at 46, I kind of quit. I moved to Aspen, Colorado, built a 15,000 square foot house, bought a jet, traveled with the late John Denver for 6 months, was on six nonprofit boards. I mean, I really enjoyed it. And in doing that, lost control of my company. So, I don't regret the 12 years in Aspen. It was wonderful.
I bet not. Yeah. You know,
but I learned that if you're in the kind of business I'm in a professional services company, you have to continue to source it. You have to continue to be the thought leader. You have to continue to show up with people. And even though it ran really well for a long time, I made a lot of money. I had a lot of fun. I think we did a lot of good. I gradually lost control of the key asset in that kind of company, which is the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that company failed. Finally, I ended up firing 240 people and closing 15 offices. And I went back to work. And I work today mentoring other entrepreneurs, people that want to live extraordinary lives in addition to their success. And so a lot of it's from my success and a lot of it's from that failure.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And I want to ask you about those, you know, what you've learned from your wins and losses in a minute, but take us back to that. You know, what you said about that initial course was really interesting, that it changed your life and it changed that you went from broke to making more money in a month than you were in a year. And then, you know, so on and so forth. What was it about that? Was it a mindset shift, or were they giving you actionable items to, you know, use in your business that would help with growth, or was it kind of a combination of both?
That training, that's a really good question. And that training then and the work that I do now, well, that's not quite 100% true, but that training then did not mention one word about business or making money. Not a word.
Okay. That's kind of what I figured. Yeah.
What they did was they allowed me to get myself out of the way. And it sounds like a cliche, but I think for a lot of us, we are in our own way.
I agree with that. Yep.
You know, I had a mother who was angry and violent, but most of all, she was critical. There was nothing I ever did was right. You know, part of that story, someone reminded me, a good friend reminded me of this recently. In high school, the graduating class was 300 students. In the same year that I worked full time and made more money than my father had ever made, I was named most likely to succeed, and I graduated sixth out of 300. That's pretty good, right?
Oh, for sure.
I called my mother and I said, I'm number six out of 300. The first words out of her mouth were, "Why weren't you number one?"
Oh. Yeah.
So
yeah,
I had to overcome that. I was extremely self-critical. And sure. I was critical of others. I did the very thing they tell you not to do in relationship building. You know, I was a pain in the ass. And so what I got in the training was a sense of what was possible for me.
Okay.
If I would take personal responsibility for my life, stop being a victim of other people and situations, if I kind of relaxed into just being with people.
Okay.
In a genuine way, a bunch of things like that. So my relationships improved, and everything, you know, if you're going to lead anything, it all comes down to relationships. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how are you going to attract the best team? How are you going to get the best vendors? How are you going to convince the banker if you needed some money? You know, all of those things are relationship things.
Yeah, sure.
And so that's what I got. And that's a lot of what I work with executives on today. And they did it in an experiential way, not in a lecture, not in, you know, typical academic way. It's the kind of thing you cannot get from a book or from a video or from, for that matter, from a podcast.
Yeah.
You got to jump in and take some risks, some personal risks. You got to expose yourself somewhat and be real. Mm-hmm. And the experiences in that kind of training are set up to kind of trick you into doing that while having some fun. So,
yeah,
you know, so
if you can have some fun with it, that's really important. Is there a tip, like, you know, just one tip or trick that you learned from that really kind of helps in a big way to help you get out of your own way? Because I definitely agree with that. I think some days you really feel like everything's clicking, everything's going really well, and you're kind of in the zone, and even if things go wrong, you're okay with it. You roll with it and you feel okay. And then other days it just feels like everything is against you, and you just feel like, I'd feel sometimes like I am in my own way, and it's tough to get around that, except for waking up the next day and hoping that, you know, trying to put yourself in the right mindset to do better.
Look, my answer on that is, I'll start with a little quick personal story, which is, after 20 years of people telling me that I should write a book about our work, I did write one. It's called Living an Extraordinary Life. And in the first year after it was published, I did a lot of radio and television interviews. That's how you sell the book, right? And go to book signings and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned, you know, you send the book ahead before the interview and somebody reads it. Usually not the interviewer. I found some intern or some grunt, you know, has to read this thing. And then they come up with about five questions. And one of them is always snarky. It's one of those questions is always designed to put you back on your heels and see if they can rattle you a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing interview after interview, and this interviewer, a guy on the radio, says, "Well, what makes your book different than other personal development books? You know, they're all, you know, we got too many of them already." And I said, I heard myself say, you know that expression? Like, you don't
think,
I didn't think it consciously.
Like an out-of-body experience or something.
But I'm hearing the words come out as I say, well, oh, and because he said, aren't these personal development books all derivative? you know, he came up with a big word. Good for him.
Yeah.
And I said, well, actually, all personal development books are derivative, including mine. Yeah. And, you know, the only two originals I know of are the Holy Bible and Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. So, and then suddenly I realized I'm on this show to sell my book. And I just told the audience they shouldn't buy my book. You know, it's derivative.
Yeah.
But the reason
it's not a bad thing, maybe, you know,
that, yeah, it was honest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, the reason I share that is that, I've said in trainings the following, and I've said it consciously and I mean it. If you or anyone, if you can become really aware of your feelings and what is sourcing them, you don't have to go to a training. I mean, that's one where you can do the training for yourself.
Okay.
So a piece of music, a song that you suddenly, oh, I love that song. Look a little deeper. What is the message that you're identifying with in that song? What is it triggering in you? That person, that person in your life that gets you angry every time you're around them, right? They're a gift to you, because if you look at what it is that sourced that anger, you're going to find a lot about yourself. It isn't that other person. It's you. Something you read, something you, a person you experience, a song, a movie, anything that touches you emotionally and causes you to be angry, sad, joyful, or fearful are like an open gate to what's next for you in terms of what you need to learn about you.
Okay.
And it's going to make you more vulnerable. It's going to make you more powerful. It's going to make you more clear. And I do think that there are books that really can help. There are videos that can really help. But ultimately, you know, and I think the old line is, never ask a barber if you need a haircut.
Right.
So yeah. Don't ask me if you should go to a high impact experiential learning event. I'm going to say yes.
Sure.
You know, come and do this training that I'm doing tomorrow and the next 4 days.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you're going to get more, people are going to get more out of that kind of experience for sure. But it's always cool for, you know, to kind of understand a little bit about it and what, you know, what are, you know, some things that people can do on their own. And then they realize, oh, that's really helpful. Now I need more, you know, I need to experience more of that. I need to understand why that works and, you know, or more tactics to help, with whatever it is, like getting out of your own way and being more productive. And, but I like that. That's great advice. Just kind of being in touch with your emotions and what's going on with you and not, and yeah, I think we kind of try and steamroll through all that stuff.
Yep. Especially men. I mean,
For sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've heard that's a reason we don't tend to live as long. So, I mean,
could be
some truth to that. That's awesome. Well, I want to go back again to those wins and losses that you were talking about. What were your biggest takeaways from the wins, and what were your biggest takeaway from the losses as well? Because you can always learn something. You're always learning something in the wins and the losses.
Well, wins first. Simple one. I participated for 2 years in someone else's coaching program. It's called Strategic Coach. And, you know, people can Google it and look it up, and they do that program, you know, in a bunch of different cities. And I got a lot of value from it. But one of those was to celebrate your wins. So what you learn in the Strategic Coach is that what entrepreneurs do and what I did is you set a goal here. And when you get right about to here, you know, you're 20% away, what do you do? You set another goal.
Okay.
And then you get to 80% of that. And what do? You set another goal. It's a big strength we have. What's missing from that is celebration. And celebrating that you take it all the way to the goal, throw a party, brag a little bit, you know, and that sense of completion that you get from that really empowers you going forward, and just makes your life a whole lot more fun. And also your success inspires the people around you, your team, your family, and, you know, you get some more support if you celebrate life. So that's one of the things I learned from winning, is that when we hit certain milestones, I learned that, contrary to my mother's attitude, stop and smell the roses, you know, gift yourself. That's how I bought the jet. You know, I did that to celebrate a milestone that we hit. And so that's something I learned from winning.
Yeah,
is to enjoy it. You know, that's why we do these things. That's why we take these risks, work these insane hours, get all that disapproval you get as an entrepreneur. On the losses side, another story. I went back to Japan after the first 11 years. I went back for a year when the Japanese economy exploded negatively, blew up. They called it bursting the bubble. That's what they called it. We were overexposed on the expense side. I went back. I had to, you know, you can't fire anybody in Japan. So it was a delicate year, and it was a difficult year. And I had about a zillion points on the Hyatt Hotels reward program. And I was trying to set an example to my staff of saving money. So I used my points, and I stayed at one of the finest hotels in the world, the Grand Hyatt in Shinjuku, Tokyo. And on the top of that hotel was an incredibly famous, hard-to-get-a-reservation restaurant. And, of course, because I'm a guest and I'm at the platinum level or whatever, anytime I needed a seat, I could get one. So I would reward myself at least once a week by going to this incredible restaurant. And they had an American jazz trio playing. You know, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
However, I'm alone. And I, you know, sitting at a table alone in a busy restaurant just doesn't feel so good. So, but they had a counter of only four seats that looked into the kitchen of this incredible hotel called the New York Grill. And I'm interested in how people do things. I'm interested in excellence, like how do they create this incredibly popular place? And it was unusual in several ways because, first of all, the woman was a chef. A woman was a chef in Japan. Highly unusual. An American woman. And she's 35 years old. I mean, everything about it was wrong. And she's the chef of one of the most successful restaurants in that huge city. And I was just fascinated. And I remember one of the things she did, she stationed herself in the middle of the kitchen. So the cooks prepare the food and the waiters serve it, right? She's right in the middle.
Yeah.
And the cook puts the plate down in front of her and she looks at it for presentation, right? Mm-hmm. And is everything done right? I saw her pick up plates and dump the whole thing into the garbage and scream at people in English. And of course they don't speak English.
Yeah. You know,
so I did this several times. I watched this woman. I'm fascinated. It's just incredible. And, and then later I had a meeting with the key supporters of our business. These are volunteers, mostly business people, that send their people to our trainings. Okay. And, you know, we're struggling. We're really fighting for every bit of market share, every bit of revenue. So I thought, I'm going to gather these people together and see if I can contribute to them and then get their input about what's next for our business. Mm-hmm. So I decide, I've got to do something special to attract them. So I said, I'm going to invite this woman, this chef, to be a speaker, you know, for our little thing. So I went to the hotel manager. I said, I really want to do this. He said, great, I'll arrange it. And the next day he came to my room with a bottle of wine and other gifts and said, no, she said no.
Really?
Okay. Anyway, I struggled through that And I got her to come. And she came in the room. She was angry. She was resentful. You know, I mean, I leaned on, you know, my relationship with Hyatt to get her to come. Wrong approach, right?
Yeah.
When the boss tells you have to do something, that's not a good start. Yeah. So within 5 minutes, because I teed her up by just saying, I really admire what you do. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything you can share with other business people, we want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those guys, one of our graduates, asked her a question. He said, I understand how you create a good dish, one good dish. I understand you can do that for one night, but how do you do it every day? How do you maintain those standards?
Mm-hmm.
And this woman said, you have to source your business with your energy and your standards every single day. And mm-hmm. what I learned from the losses is that I didn't learn that lesson that day. But boy, when my business fell apart, when I lost $30 million, that little meeting came right up in my face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realized, I had a lot of fun in Aspen. I skied 80 days a year. I traveled. I mm-hmm. raised some great kids. I had a lot of fun. I didn't source my business every day.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's the biggest learning I got from the loss.
Right. You have to be in touch with it all the time.
It's not just the data. It's not just the facts. It's the relationships. It's the energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the hard to define little things. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot more. And I actually, in effect, what I realize is a lot of what I sell today and deliver came from what I learned from that failure.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense.
So
nice.
And I've been told it's helpful by many clients. So I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah. I think that's some great advice. Yeah.
For sure. So Robert, when you're coaching someone, man, what's typically the biggest hurdle that you help them overcome?
I'm working with incredibly successful people, and I want to keep reminding myself of that. They're only coming to me. They can only pay my fees if they've already been somewhat successful.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've learned about them is that my program, in a very general sense, consists of three things. Completing your past, first of all. Secondly, is telling the truth about current reality. And thirdly, is choosing your future. And those are just words, and they sound like cliches maybe, but what I've learned about senior executives, male, female, old, young, entrepreneurial, or even in a corporate job, is they don't get to that level burden-free. What right. they do is, you know, I think you used the expression, they crash through things.
Mm-hmm.
I've been asking two questions with large groups. I've been I was in China for the last 6 years. I've been in front of over 100,000 people in the last 6 years. And when I get some trust built with an audience, I've been asking one or two questions, sometimes both. One of the questions is, how many of you are estranged from at least one member of your family?
Mm.
You know, no contact or angry contacts, or anyway, it's not working. A relationship that's not working.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been shocked by the answer. And by the way, the question comes from my life, not like some theory that I thought about.
Right.
70% is the answer. 70% of executives in a huge audience are willing to put up their hand and say, something's not working in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And the second question is, how many of you have been betrayed, either personally or in business? That's 100%.
Yeah.
But if you look at what entrepreneurs and executives do with betrayal or estrangement, is we stuff it. I mean, we're driven. We're clear about what we want to create. We don't have time for that psychological stuff. Don't quote Oprah, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Sure, sure.
We're busy. We're focused. Okay, it's bad. I don't like it, but I'm going on.
If it doesn't improve the bottom line, sweep it out of the way.
It doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll show up in things like hiring. It'll blind you to certain things. Even, you know, it's weird how psychology works, right? It changes how we look at things. It's the filters, right? And so in hiring, in firing, in keeping people you shouldn't keep. So it goes on and on like that. So whatever happens for you, whether it is joyful or sad or something that produced anger or something that produced fear, it shows up in your daily life. Only you don't, most of the time you're not conscious of it because you stuffed it, right? So clearing that kind of stuff, taking the negative energy off it, telling the truth about it, you know, that's incredibly valuable for most executives, because in addition to their success, what's often missing is joy and satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a handicap in just lots of ways, even for the bottom line. And then the second thing, you know, the Buddhists call it developing a selfless regard for reality. Successful entrepreneurs, particularly, we live in a story. You know, and we share that story with new hires, with clients, with bankers, with everybody. You know, we've got a story going. It's a mark of all entrepreneurs. You better be a good storyteller.
Right.
And sometimes that story has no connection to reality.
Right.
So if you can get yourself, your stuff out of the way and just see the truth about your sales, about your people, about the market. It's incredibly valuable. If you've done those two things, completing your past and learning to better tell the truth about your current reality, what you do is kind of clear a space for an extraordinary future. And not the future that your parents thought you should have, not what the culture tells you, not what's correct or right or any of that, but a future you really chose.
Mm-hmm.
Something that really lights your fire
and resonates with everybody. Yeah.
Lights you up. So that's kind of a model of what I do in working with people. And yes, I've had the experience of running a high impact experiential learning company with, you know, some people refer to it as herding cats, you know, 70 full-time trainers, half of them with narcissistic personality disorder. You learn a lot. You know, and that's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to use the practices that you teach in order to, you know, drive the success of your business too, which is pretty cool, because you can really show how that, you can demonstrate that, how that works by how well your organization is run, how the people operate, how, and how you're able to scale that.
You know, when I think, I was challenged recently by a friend who asked me, what's your competitive advantage? You know, you, Robert White, as a person and as a mentor. And I said, I've been there and done that. You know, I didn't just read some book or go to some college class. I've been out there in the world winning and losing and hopefully learning from some of it.
Yeah.
That's what I'd attempt to share.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So what's been the most challenging thing for you about being an entrepreneur? You might've already mentioned it, but you know, so far, what's been the most challenging part of the entrepreneurial journey for you?
I'm not sure. Maybe if given some time, maybe I could answer about most. I've learned that I can become a prisoner of my own story, first of all. You know, I get so wrapped up in it that I don't see things that are so obvious. And later it's that, oh, how did I do that? You know, or why did I do that? So that's one thing. I've learned that if I had it to do over again, I would have integrated my personal life more into my business. I don't like that word. I don't like that word balance. I think balance is really tricky and really difficult, but I think you can integrate. I think people, and I know some of them, have integrated better. I would have learned how to play more often when I started making a whole lot of money. You know, Aspen was an extreme experience of that. It was extreme, though. It wasn't integrated and balanced. I went from work all the time to play all the time. I didn't get to that point. So that's been a painful learning. You know, I sent one of my sons to an Outward Bound experience. I think he was 15 years old, and it was up in Oregon somewhere. And the food you ate on day 30, you packed in on day one. You know, it was a tough deal. I mean, you got the big pack and you're sleeping on the ground and all that kind of stuff with a group of other teenagers. And when he got back, I said, you know, of course, you know, and I paid for it. I sent him there, you know, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I care about my son. So I said, you know, hey, what did you get? What did you learn?
Yeah.
And I said, how was the experience? He said, it was fantastic. Thanks, Dad. It was wonderful. And by the way, I finished that conversation by saying, well, do you want to do it again next year? He said, hell no.
yeah, like, thanks, great experience. Check that off my list and we're good. Yeah.
But he said, I said, well, what did you learn specifically? And he said, I learned you can't trust everybody.
Okay.
And I would apply that to myself. I think something that's a strength for me is I lean toward trust. I lean toward accepting people the way they are, and I like people and all of that. I've found out that sometimes my kind of positive, everything's going to be great attitude gets me in trouble with certain kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And that I miss out on signals that I later look back and I go, the signal was there. But my natural way of being caused me to not see it. So that's one of the painful learnings. And you lose money or you get embarrassed or there's things like that. But the feeling of that betrayal, that's the tough part. You know, that's painful.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you are so positive and you like people and you want to see the good in people and you know, especially when you're a positive person, I think that's really tough, you know, because you just want things to work out and they don't always work out. But I think, you know, it sounds like you're the kind of person who wants to figure it out, find the solution. And that's tough when things don't work out and people don't respect that and respect you. Yeah.
And of course, you know, you can, one of the distinctions we teach, a lot of it's about responsibility and personal responsibility, owning your own life. And the distinction that's interesting is, am I responsible to that person or am I responsible for them?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, our teaching is you cannot be responsible for another person after they're 21 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only be responsible to them in terms of how you behave and how you hold them to account. They're adults now, right? Mm-hmm. And I've made that mistake. I've thought that I should be responsible for some people. And that leads to a lot of resentment. It leads to a lot of disappointment. Often, by the way.
Both ways.
Yeah. And it disempowers the other person because you're taking responsibility for their life.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's a lose-lose kind of deal. So,
Agreed. So, Robert, as we wrap up this episode, man, if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, you know, we're going to revoke your podcaster credentials for that question. Hey, it is though the same one I give everybody, which is basically to wake up. You know, we're in a world where information's flying at us like crazy, written, graphic, sound, motion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And what we do to handle it, what the human brain does to handle it, is we numb ourselves and we just start missing stuff. But we're numbing ourselves for survival. You know, we cannot handle that, like that expression, drinking from a fire hose. You know, well, information's like that in our lives. So I think if if first of all, if we can wake up and just slow things down so that we set up our lives so that the important information comes to us and all the rest doesn't.
Yep.
The second piece is the same thing I had to learn, and I think people still need to learn. We live in a victim culture. We're taught to be victims. And boy, you got to get off it. You got to own your own life. You have to take personal responsibility for everything and own it. And this is not about blame and shame and regret. It's just owning it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
I got it. And then finally, the key for entrepreneurs, for everybody, is to learn a certain level of mastery in communication, to realize that everything happens in communication.
Yeah.
Unless you want to sit in your room and, you know, read a book or something.
Yeah.
If you want to be out in the world, you better learn how to communicate. And written communication. And so if you're not a good writer, go to a class. If you're not a good speaker, join Toastmasters or something where you get some feedback about how you show up in public. If you're not a good listener, get somebody to bitch slap you, you know, and wake you up and get you to listen. So those three things: wake up, take responsibility, and communicate better. Your life will get better and your business will get better.
Yeah.
I love it, man.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think we could have got that without asking that last question. So, well, guys, that's a wrap for this episode. And from the both of us, Robert, we want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us and adding value in what we're doing on our podcast.
Yes. And look, I have a little thing that I wrote over 30 years of work, really, about living an extraordinary life. And it's free. If you go on my website, extraordinarypeople.com, and you can sign up for it. I'll send it to you. You can share it with your friends or with your team. It's my gift. It's my way of staying in touch with you.
Love it.
That's great. Yeah, it's really been a pleasure to have you on, Robert. Thank you all so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. As Robert said, to learn more about what he's working on, check out extraordinarypeople.com. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast and don't forget to download our free ebook about the success mindset at thatentrepreneurlife.com.
Thanks for continuing to support what we do as entrepreneurs, and don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.